Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, and welcome to the beginning of the Labor Day weekend. A lot of Americans right now are in transit or at least making their plans as to how to enjoy this weekend. Meanwhile, there is a lot in the news. We'll be talking about a lot of that today on this program. The topic for our program today is going to be making history and how certain historic developments should or should not to impact our vote, how we should think about them, regardless of whether we're going to vote for the candidate. And just to fast forward to our conversation, today we have a new equation on the table. In terms of the 2008 presidential race, we now know that the first African-American candidate for president is now the nominee. That is, the first African-American nominee is now known unto us, Barack Obama. And any way you look at it, that's an historic development. Meanwhile, as of today, we also know that we have a woman on the ticket, the first Republican woman to be on a presidential ticket, in this case running for vice president, will be Governor Sarah Heath Palin. And we're going to be talking about her more. But the real topic of the conversation today is how we as Americans should think through this. What does it say about our country that the 2008 presidential ticket, or the tickets of the two parties put together, represents something this historic? We're going to be talking about what that means, what it doesn't mean, how it influences the vote, how we should put all this together. And I'm going to argue that we ought to celebrate this development regardless of our vote. The fact that this is something new for us as a nation is something good and something healthy. And we're going to talk about why that is so and try to take an historical perspective on this, and at the same time say that doesn't necessarily mean that, at least for me, that nails the vote. To me, you get down to the issues and the character and the composite of the candidate for the vote, but you also take an historical perspective and recognize that something very meaningful has taken place here. We'll get to that conversation in a moment, but of course we can only have that conversation because of the big news out of Dayton, Ohio today, when Senator John McCain, the presumptive nominee for the office of president of the Republican Party, announced that the Alaska governor, Sarah Louise Heath Palin, primarily known as Sarah Palin, will be his choice to be the vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party. The announcement was made shortly after noon today when you had a large crowd of about 15,000 people at Wright State University's Coliseum there in Dayton, Ohio, and the news was made. It was one of those photogenic, telegenic moments when you had the Palin family and the McCain family out there, of course. Sarah Palin has been known to us not so much because she's governor of Alaska, because 4 months ago we did a program about her and about her son. Her little son, Trigg, born about 4 months ago. And Trigg Paxson Palin is indeed a child who was born with Down syndrome. He was known to indeed have Down syndrome as he was diagnosed during the pregnancy. And the Palins together, Governor Palin and her husband, Todd, made the decision to bring little Trigg Paxson Van Palin to birth. And we talked about what that meant just in terms of the background of the fact that right now between 80 and 90% of all babies diagnosed with Down syndrome are being aborted. So single-handedly, let's just get to the bottom line here. Single-handedly, Senator John McCain has reset the equation for the 2008 presidential race. By adding Sarah Palin to the ticket, he has accomplished a very great deal in terms of changing the way this entire election will be discussed and understood. She is the first woman to be on either of the top two positions on the national ticket of a major party. The previous one, of course, being as far back as 1984, when Walter Mondale asked New York Representative Geraldine Ferraro to be his running mate. So she's not the first woman to run for vice president, but she's the first woman on the Republican ticket and only the second woman in American history to run for vice president. It's interesting that even as the announcement was made today in Dayton, Ohio, Governor Palin mentioned that it was today that she and her husband Todd are celebrating their 20th wedding anniversary. Their oldest son, Track, is right now in preparation to be deployed to Iraq. He entered the United States Army immediately after graduating from high school and is now ready for deployment. They have three daughters who were there with mom and dad on the platform in Dayton, Ohio, and little Trig, born on April 18th of this year. Trig Paxson Van Palen was also there in the arms of his oldest sister. It was a beautiful picture. And I don't know if you heard the announcement or heard Governor Palin's speech, but it is pretty much the buzz of America right now just because of the historic development and because of how she handled the speech and that opportunity, which was in many ways the introduction of Governor Palin to the nation. Alaskans certainly know her well, but Americans are going to get to know her well very quickly. We're going to be talking about some of the things going on in the race and some of the things that are represented by this historic development. I have to say that it, just in terms of the electoral challenge faced by Senator John McCain, he accomplished a great deal for those in particular who constitute a very important part of the support base of the Republican Party, whose hierarchy of electoral issues starts with the issue of the sanctity of human life. Because he probably could not have found an elected official anywhere in the United States of America who could have more personally and nearly perfectly represented the sanctity of human life in terms of her presence on this ticket. He has given relief to a tremendous number of conservative American evangelicals who say, look, I believe that issues ranging from poverty and AIDS to global warming and all the rest are indeed important issues, but I have to start my list of issues with the sanctity of human life, because to start anywhere else is to surrender far too much. And even as Senator McCain had been known to have considered such persons as former Pennsylvania Governor Tom Ridge and now independent Senator Joe Lieberman for the ticket, it came as a relief to very many people. And I'll admit, it came as a relief to me when this news came considering his choice of Governor Palin. But it wasn't just a relief. I think this is really something that will add dynamism to this ticket. Her husband is a member of the Steelworkers Union. Her son going to Iraq, she having herself traveled several times to Iraq. It's going to be very interesting. You can imagine some of the conversation that will be taking place, debates over experience and how you weigh one thing over another, debates over the pro-life issue. You can expect that right away, because one of the big things being talked about all afternoon now in the media is whether or not women who were attracted to Hillary Clinton as a candidate and have been unhappy because she did not get the Democratic nomination, the conversation is whether or not they might consider voting for John McCain in the Republican ticket because of Governor Palin's presence on the ticket. But very quickly, you have activists from the Democratic Party who say, no, they will not do that because their commitment was not just to Hillary Clinton, but to a very pro-abortion, or they would say pro-choice position in defense of Roe v. Wade and a woman's right to an abortion, something that Governor Palin certainly does not represent. So it'll be fascinating to see how all these things play out, not just over the next, say, 90 days until we get to November 4, but especially over the next week or so. Because one of the things I hope you've been noting in terms of the press coverage of the Democratic Convention has been that it's been given a lot of airtime, that's to be expected. You have all the talking heads on there, that's to be expected. But there's been just an enormous amount of appreciation for what went on and the historic character of what takes place when America has the experience of having a major political party nominate an African-American man to be the president of the United States. It'll be interesting to see if there is a similar kind of interest on the part of the media and others in the presence of Governor Palin on this ticket. Now, let me tell you what's coming up Monday. On Monday, Labor Day, we're going to be featuring a classic rebroadcast of the Albert Mueller program when we had as our topic the birth of Trig Paxson Van Palen, long before anyone actually believed that his mother might appear here on the Republican presidential ticket. And so it's going to be fascinating, I think, for us to hear that all over again. And let's just remind ourselves, the background to this is the fact that the vast majority of babies in America that are diagnosed with Down syndrome are aborted, but not Trig Paxson Van Palen. I published an article on my website entitled Welcome to the World, Trig Paxson Van Palen, and started out saying this: a little boy with an extra chromosome was born on April 18th. His name is Trig Paxson Van Palen, and his new home is the Alaska Governor's Mansion in Juneau. Well, if the Republican Party has its way, his new home may be the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C. We'll stay tuned for that. I want you right now to think about the conversation we're going to have when we come back from this break. And that has to do with how we should celebrate, reflect about, think about, talk about the historic developments represented when you put the two tickets of our two major political parties side by side and say, something's different in this picture. You go back to 1960, look at those fascinating black and white portraits and the black and white newspaper photographs and the footage from the conventions. All men. All white men, primarily. And certainly in terms of presence on the ticket. Fast forward to 1984. Walter Mondale asked Geraldine Ferraro to be his running mate. Now fast forward to 2008. Barack Obama, the first African-American to be nominated by a major American political party for the office of President of the United States. And now Governor Sarah Palin, the first Republican woman to run also on a national ticket. It's going to be fascinating to have this discussion about what it means and how you think we should think and talk about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255 on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. It's hard to fast forward and imagine just what historians might say about our own times. There's always the danger that the participant-observer problem is so much a looming issue here that we're not even sure what's important in terms of our own times because we're living it. It may take some time for some things to settle out. But I got to tell you, I'm pretty sure that historians are going to have to reference the 2008 presidential race. And I'm really sure of this. The very first time that an African-American appears as a major political party's nominee for the office of President of the United States. I mean, we're talking about the Voting Rights Act just coming in the mid-1960s. We're talking about the segregation becoming a major issue of American concern only in the late 1950s and in the mid-1950s. We're talking about the lingering effects of racism in a nation that began with slavery as a legally established institution and a central part of the economy. And now we're looking at something that's very, very different. And it really is important for us, I think, to ask the question, what does this mean? What does this say? And how should we think about this? And then, as if that wasn't interesting enough, John McCain's announcement today that his chosen running mate is Alaska Governor Sarah Palin resets the equation all over again. Now, not only do we have the first African-American nominee for the office of President of the United States, now we have the second woman nominated to be vice president and the first Republican woman nominated to be vice president. And she right now, the sitting governor of one of the 50 states. It's a fascinating discussion, and this is going to lead to all kinds of different questions. And some of these are pouring in to our website and to my email box right now. I've done media interviews for a great deal of the day. Let me just say that one of the questions I'm going to ask my reporters is, as a conservative evangelical and a complementarian, that is, who believes that there are assigned roles for men and women in the home and in the church, what does this mean about the society? That's not an uncomplicated question. That's a fair question to direct to someone like me or to someone who believes that the New Testament and the Bible as a whole sets out some very clear gender roles. Is this something that we should celebrate, a woman being on this ticket? The whole question about the presence of an African-American on the ticket. You know, this is history, and this is something that every single American should celebrate. It says something good about the United States of America that we have reached this point. It says something hopeful about, I think, the future of race relations in this country. It says something about the possibility of eclipsing many of these issues by finding common leaders, common cause, common vision, common excitement, common dreams. The question is, though, are these things matters of great historic import that we should recognize and in themselves celebrate? Or are they indicators of how we should vote? How do you figure this out? I think there's some people who are going to have a hard time figuring that out. That's why I want to start the conversation today. And now that we have Sarah Palin as John McCain's vice presidential choice, all of a sudden this has gotten more interesting. This vice presidential nominee, unknown to many Americans, has indeed reset the political equation. And here we are with this conversation today. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. How does this factor into your thinking? What are you doing with this? How are you talking about it with your children? After all, many of them will not realize how important these developments are unless you help to instruct them about this and give them the background. Do a little political briefing. play your own part as one of the talking heads on television and sit your kids down and say, this is what's going on. This is what it looks like. This is what it means. Do you realize that this has never happened before? And then there are the big questions. How do we fit this into our worldview? How do we fit this into our political decision-making? The phone number again is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And we got callers coming in from across the country, and that's great because this is a national question. This isn't just a local question. This isn't just the question of electing a mayor or a governor or a senator. This is now electing the president and vice president of the United States. In a given lifetime, very few people are going to have the opportunity to vote in more than, you know, say 20 of these. You know, you'd be 80 years old to vote in 20 of these. It's a fascinating thing, and that assumes you vote when you're born, which isn't true either. So, I mean, you take some off of that and add some on the other side. Let's say that in a maximum lifetime, you have something like 20 opportunities to cast a presidential ballot. You're going to remember every single one of them. It becomes a part of your history as much as a part of American history. It becomes a part of your own understanding and an extension of your own political and governing philosophy and your own moral convictions, your own exercise of stewardship as much as it becomes a part of the nation's history. You look back to significant points in history and say, do you remember where you were when this happened? I think we're going to be looking back to this election and saying, do you remember how you voted? Do you remember what you were thinking when that happened? Did you recognize the significance of all of this? Again, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from you and to know what you're thinking. And you may have some interesting comments and issues to raise, questions to pose that we haven't even thought of in light of this historic development. The phone number 877-893-8255. Let's go to Georgetown, Kentucky, where Jeff's on the line. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, Dr. Moore. I had wanted to see if you could comment on the fact that Sarah Palin has a new child that was born, and I understand that she has Down syndrome, how that will affect the talk about abortion in the race that's coming up in light of the fact that she's lived out her pro-life values.
Yeah, I think it adds an enormous amount of credibility to the Republican ticket on the pro-life cause. And that's something that really, in terms of votes, John McCain should have in the bag. In the sense that John McCain, on the abortion issue, has a pretty consistent pro-life record. But John McCain has been in the wrong position on the stem cell issue. That's been of concern to me as well as to many others. And that's something we'll continue to press him on. But, you know, just in terms of the abortion question, John McCain's done very well. But John McCain has also sent some signals throughout his political career that have caused pause and concern on the part of those who are really looking for consistently and predictably pro-life candidates. I mean, flirting with the idea of a Tom Ridge as vice president, of a Joseph Lieberman as vice president. These kinds of things caused a bit of tremor in his own base. I'll go beyond saying that he solved that problem to say he solidified and amplified the issue, which gets right to your question, Jeff, by naming Sarah Palin as his vice president. Because just as you say, it's not just that she has a consistent pro-life voting record. It's not just that she would articulate all the right positions on these issues. It's that when she stands there with her family, with her husband, Todd, and with their fifth child and second son, Trigg Paxton Van Palin, there is a pro-life testimony that I think every single American has to admire and every single American has to respect. And when she said that there was absolutely no way she and her husband Todd would consider an abortion when they found out this baby had Down syndrome. And why? She said, no way, because we knew that God had given us this child. That's a testimony. And frankly, that's a judgment. That's a judgment on a nation, which is not honestly confronting the fact that 80 to 90% of babies diagnosed prenatally with Down syndrome are being aborted. And it just so happens that there is always a bit of judgment in every historic development. That's true for Barack Obama. There's judgment on this nation that it has taken this long to have an African-American nominee for the office of president, one of the major political parties. It's judgment on America that we have to talk about this in terms of making history, but we do. And it's judgment on America that when you talk about adding Sarah Palin to this ticket, you're talking about her pro-life convictions, not just on their own, but in contrast to what is lacking in much of America, and I would point out, in the Democratic Party's platform as well. Back with your comments. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Let me tell you what I think are the difficult questions related to this. And as I do so, let me again invite your calls. Love to hear what you think about how we should talk about, think about, reflect upon, and base perhaps our voting upon the fact that we have the first African American at the top of an American presidential ticket, or for that matter, on an American presidential ticket, either the vice presidential or presidential slot. The nomination by the Democratic Party of Senator Barack Obama of Illinois is historic any way you look at it, and insofar as we are celebrating the fact that an African American has been nominated for the office of president, we do something that reflects a great deal upon our nation's history. And, you know, my concerns about Barack Obama are about his positions. But I'm going to be very public in saying I celebrate the fact that an African American has been nominated. And I think this opens the door for a whole new era in American politics. I would also say that the nomination, or likely nomination, now what we're supposed to call the presumed nomination, of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin as the vice presidential nominee of the Republican Party likewise makes history. And there are a lot of people asking questions, you know, well, how should this influence my vote? How should I think about this? One of the lamentable things we must admit in this country is that there will be people who will vote against Barack Obama for the wrong reason. And insofar as anyone's reason for voting against Barack Obama is his ethnic identity, his racial identity, the fact that he's an African American, that is a sin against God, against the Imago Dei, and our belief in the fact that every single human life is made in the image of God, and every single human being is thus made in the image of God. That is a slander against the Creator. It's not merely a bad political decision. It's not merely an embarrassing political posture. It's a slander against the Creator and his intentions, if that's the reason why anyone would vote against Barack Obama. It would be also a very difficult thing to explain that all of a sudden now we should consider that issue alone as the justification for voting for a candidate without regard to positions, because one of the best and most important acts of political maturity that we can exercise in the midst of this campaign is to say we need to celebrate the historic development, we need to grab a hold of the opportunity this represents for the nation, but we can't forget that what we're really electing is someone to fulfill a political office, and thus the convictions that will shape that individual stewardship of that office have to be our consideration, and indeed to consider anything else as a primary issue is just not a faithful act of political and citizenship stewardship. I think there's a lot going on there. I think there are a lot of difficult questions that may come up in terms of Sarah Palin, or apparently difficult questions. I think there are some people, and I've had reporters calling me about this afternoon, saying, look, you're a complementarian. You're on the record about women serving in distinctive roles in the church and in the home, where you believe there is a pattern. You believe that men are primarily called to leadership in a very important and public way. You believe that that's important and a part of God's ordained order. So what do you do with a woman that's running for vice president of the United States? Well, you know, I'll be honest. And by the way, let me give you the number again to join the conversation. It's 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I think when you start looking at that, you realize that the distinction here is very important. And I've written about this and talked about this. And let me put it this way. If you come into my study, and when you enter my study, you look at the portraits on the wall in my library, you will see some people you would probably absolutely expect. You'll see portraits of William Tyndale and Martin Luther, of the great reformers and historic theologians of the church. In the center part of my library is a Renaissance portrait of someone I greatly admire, a Tudor character, William Cecil, the first Lord Burleigh. And his historic role was to be the longest-serving advisor to Elizabeth I, the woman, the first Elizabeth to serve as Queen of England, and one of the most historic figures in Western civilization. And there's a portrait of Elizabeth I in my study, but there's also an interesting photograph, and that photograph is of Margaret Thatcher. and I have the honor of being with her. And I'll tell you right now, if I'd ever had the opportunity to vote for Margaret Thatcher, I would have done so instantly. In other words, I do believe that there is a God-ordained role for women in the home and in the church. I believe that it is not the same thing in the larger society when it comes to being CEO of a company, or being governor of a state, or member of the Senate, or president or vice president of the United States. But I think it is a fair question just to say, you know, we're going to have to trust that she's fulfilling her responsibilities as wife and mother as well. But I would argue there's no biblical constraint on her running, and a lot of reason to celebrate it. Back with more. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I'd love to know how you're thinking about this. How are you talking about it with your children, with the conversation around your dinner table, at your workplace, on your college campus? There's a lot of buzz about this across the country. Just before coming into the studio this afternoon, I checked not so much American newspapers, but international newspapers. So the websites of papers from Australia, Great Britain, Der Spiegel in Germany. It's fascinating. It's the front headline story on international news. And the American presidential race has been. It always is the topic of a great deal and focus of a great deal of conversation around the country and around the globe. But all of a sudden now, it's taken on an entirely new sense of importance. I want to know how you think about this, how we should factor all these things into electoral decision-making and the exercise of our citizenship. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Middletown, Ohio. Douglas is listening on XM170. What are you thinking, Douglas?
Well, you know, there's so much focus on history here, and I think it's really interesting that the new vice presidential nominee landed in Middletown, Ohio, and it was really in Middletown, Ohio, where George Bush won the last election. It's happened Warren County and happened Butler County, Ohio, and the election wasn't decided until those votes were counted.
You know, it's interesting, Douglas, if you're hang with me here. If you're trying to think of Middle America, it's hard to come up with a postcard better than Middletown, Ohio, there near Dayton. Douglas, were you at the event today, or tell me what the buzz is around Middletown?
Well, there's not very much. I'm one of the last people to still work in downtown. It's a kind of a hard-hit area of the country, but I just have to tell you, you know, it's a fun part of history. I think it's an exciting thing for a small town in Middle America. And I think it's more than probably a coincidence.
Now, you know, Douglas, I have to say, what you've just commented on there prompts me to say that I think the Obama campaign made a huge error in judgment when, in first responding to Governor Palin's announcement, they pointed out that and I'm having to paraphrase here, I don't have it in front of me, but it was basically that Senator John McCain has chosen a woman who is the former mayor of a city of, what, 9 or 11,000 people or something like that to be a heartbeat away from the presidency. I think if they thought that was going to scare Americans, it probably would backfire. I think there are an awful lot of Americans who think someone from a city or a town like that is exactly who should be president of the United States. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I would just be very careful. I'm not giving campaign advice here, but I'd be very careful about insulting small-town America. I don't think that's a very wise winning strategy. Let's go to Jim, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, I had a chance to read several articles today about Governor Palin. I mean, it was a master move as far as I'm concerned by McCain. Here's a lady who actually walks the walk. She doesn't talk the talk. But something that we haven't talked about yet is here's a lady who is married to a blue-collar worker, has had several kids by this man, and I just felt like when I read that today that here's a lady who understands what it means to work in the government to serve the people. And For me, that swayed me.
Jim, I appreciate that word. And by the way, her husband, Todd, is a member of the United Steelworkers of America. And I think that is going to send quite a signal. You know, let's put it this way. Let's take the two parties and put them side by side. And let's just think about the historic reputation of the two parties. With the Republican Party, probably historically more aligned with some of the elites in the business community, especially. Just thinking of it that way. If you think about a worker-management dichotomy, historically, you think of the Republican Party, back in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, as probably representing more of a management party, and the Democrats more of a worker party. And then look at this. What in the world do you do with this? What do you do with the revolution of Ronald Reagan and all of a sudden the rise of the Reagan Democrats, with the fact that Ronald Reagan was actually endorsed by some of these unions? And what do you do when, or in Reagan's case, oftentimes he was not endorsed by the union, but union members voted for him anyway. And then what do you do with now? You look at these two parties and you take the Democratic Party. What history is being made by having the first African-American at the top of that ticket? But it's hard to associate Barack Obama with a union card. And Joe Biden comes from a more working-class background. You know, his father, you know, I understand, was very much a middle-class worker and all the rest. But now you look at the Republican ticket, and there's John McCain. His family history is military, Navy, Navy, Navy. Grandfather, Admiral in the United States Navy. Father, Admiral in the United States Navy. John McCain, you know his story. And now Sarah Palin, whose husband, and she, by the way, is a former union member, and I don't know right now what union that was, but her husband, and she identified him as a proud member of the United Steelworkers of America. I got to tell you, an awful lot of people in America are saying, what's historic about this ticket? Barack Obama, first African-American? Absolutely. Sarah Palin, first Republican nominee to a national ticket? Absolutely. Sarah Palin's husband, member of the United Steelworkers Union, the United Steelworkers of America Union, on a Republican ticket. I got to tell you, there are a lot of Republicans in the 40s and the 50s who would think some major revolution had taken place for that to be the announcement. And I think that's something we ought to celebrate as well. I think, Jim, you made a very, very interesting point. And I'm sure, just in terms of the political calculation, that that had to be a part of what interested John McCain in making this choice. I understand that Todd Palin was a commercial fisherman there in Alaska, and now works as a project manager in the oil business. And so it sounds like he kind of represents Alaska there, and is a world record snow machine racer for the part of the American electorate who is following such things as snow machine racing. There you got it. Let's go to Sellersburg, Indiana. Angie, what are you thinking?
I'm just thinking that there's nothing biblically wrong with a woman to be vice president, like looking at Deborah in the Old Testament.
Yeah, that's an interesting model to use. And you start thinking of Deborah. You know, there is no doubt that throughout human history, especially when you had hereditary dynasties, that's how you end up with Elizabeth I. People were very much concerned that Elizabeth I could not rule England, that a woman could not hold the throne. By the way, one of my favorite speeches by Elizabeth I is her Tillsbury speech, which was made to the troops that were her troops getting ready to face what was believed to be inevitable defeat by the Spanish Armada. And she said that she is a queen of England, but she says, I am the daughter of a king of England. And she talked about Henry VIII, and she said, I have the stomach of a king. And by the way, anyone who knew her knew exactly what she meant. And people now look back in history at the Elizabethan era as one of the greatest hallmarks of British history. It is fascinating to think about this. And Angie, I agree with you. Now, I also want to say that I think as Christians, we're concerned with the family life and all the rest. But having her family there seemed to indicate they pretty much got that together. And they've got a long record of demonstrating that. And so I think that's something Americans will admire. And I agree with you. There's no biblical prohibition there. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Fascinating discussion, and it's not over. We've got Jim on WFIA. Jim, what are you thinking about this?
Oh, Dr. Mueller, I'm so excited. I, as a dad of a young man with Down syndrome, I am so happy with the exposure as a board member for the Down Syndrome Support Association of Southern Indiana. Our role is that as advocates of those with Down syndrome, helping our community to understand what Down syndrome is and, again, what it is not. And what greater example and exposure do we have through Sarah and Trigg in this upcoming election? And, you know, that's from a very, very narrow point of view, but from an even broader point of view. The woman who has always spoken pro-life, but now she also lives the example of pro-life and choosing that young man, Trigg, over that abortion choice that the doctors always present to us now. as parents expecting a child with Down syndrome. God bless her, and I'm happy for her.
Jim, I couldn't think of a better way for this program to come to a conclusion than with that, because you take us back to the ultimate issues, the sanctity of human life here, and why it's such an important issue to us, because we believe it's such an important issue for the future of humanity, and we believe that it's such an important issue to the Creator, who, after all, is the author of life. And, Jim, I just have to say, I don't know how Americans could look at that picture this morning. Let's forget any race for president of the United States. Let's forget any kind of partisan question about party advantage. Let's even bracket for a moment our responsibility as citizens to vote. Let's just imagine we were just looking at the picture. And the picture was of a family. And there you had a mother and a father and three girls. Missing from the picture is a teenage son, joined the army, headed for Iraq. In the arms of the eldest daughter, a baby, born April the 18th of this year. New life. Little boy in the arms. He has Down syndrome. Beautiful baby. Priceless testimony to the sanctity of human life. Judgment upon anyone who would abort a baby under those circumstances, and for that reason, who would abort a baby who is the gift rather than the imposition. You know, there are people who would have come up with all kinds of reasons why Sarah and Todd Palin should have made the abortion decision. I mean, look at the responsibility she had. Look at their stage of life. Look at all the disadvantages people might point to with the birth of any baby at that point in their life, just from the secular thinking of so many people who see babies as an imposition. Then you add the Down syndrome diagnosis to it. But here's a couple who said, we want that baby. He's ours. God gave him to us. And there he was, proudly held before the nation. You know, just to crib off of that now famous and iconic television advertisement, priceless. I'll meet you next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.